Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you with us today as we talk native plants and seed collection on the show. Two guests for you. One is Don Gustafson. Don, a board member of Wild Ones of Door Peninsula and the native seed coordinator for the Sturgeon Bay Seed Library. Don, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining in.
Thank you, Larry.
Great to have you here. Kagan Hearing is a naturalist at Crossroads at Big Creek in Sturgeon Bay, the president of Wild Ones of the Door Peninsula, and a master gardener and a master naturalist as well. Kagan, thank you for joining us.
I'm really glad to be with you. Thank you.
So as we talk with these two experts, I hope you will join in. What questions do you have about collecting seeds or maybe growing native plants or possibly designing a pollinator garden? Love to have you part of the conversation. You can just join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Kagan, let's start with you. Tell us about Crossroads at Big Creek, maybe a little of its history and its mission.
Well, Crossroads at Big Creek is a learning center and nature preserve, and we're right in the middle of Sturgeon Bay. And our mission is to inspire environmental stewardship in learners of all ages and from all backgrounds through education, research, land restoration, and outdoor experiences.
So is it a large area that you have there?
We have about 200 acres.
Wow. And right in the heart of it.
Right. If you're coming to Sturgeon Bay on the highway and you go over the bridge, the first roundabout you come to, you just turn right at the first exit and you'll be right there.
How'd you get involved?
I was a teacher in Sturgeon Bay and the school bought some land as a school forest. And as this developed, we realized that we were more than a school forest. And we built a really wonderful nature center. And about 20 years ago, we separated from the school and became a private 501c3 organization. But I like to say it was an amicable divorce. We still share the children. And I have four kindergarten classes coming out this afternoon, so we still share the children.
That's wonderful. Don, Wild Ones organization is pretty well known. I mean, we talk about Wild Ones comes up pretty often on the show, but I know there are people who may not be familiar with it. So tell us about that organization.
Well, it's Door County Wild Ones, Door Peninsula Wild Ones, and it's all about native plants. And, you know, native plants are important because they're not only beautiful, but they help our herding pollinators. So you can interact with them. If you look out your window at a pollinator garden, you can see hummingbirds and bees and butterflies and all those good things. So it's a good way of helping our pollinators.
I would definitely agree with you on that. What are some of the activities of the Door Peninsula chapter? You know, what do they participate in?
Well, we have a prairie, I should say a restored prairie, next to the YMCA, Peterson. It's called Peterson. And we can help. We plant native plants there. We get involved with our group goes out and plant there. We have seed collection like we're doing at Crossroads. We have meetings. So we just share everything about native plants and encourage others to do the same.
I want to go back to you, Kagan, because you're a master gardener, and that's something most of our listeners are familiar with, but they may not be as familiar with the designation Master Naturalist. Talk about that designation.
Well, Master Naturalist is very much like Master Gardeners. It's run under the university extension, and we have instructors that are trained. I am an instructor. And then we hold classes for people who will be willing to volunteer for the community to serve as naturalists in our various preserves and nonprofits and so forth. And so our Door County group had our first class last spring, and we had a really wonderful class. And the people in our class, our graduates, have gone out and done wonderful things. But you were asking a little bit about our Door Peninsula Wild Ones. This fall, we decided to sort of cross-pollinate. Because okay. we had the Wild Ones and Crossroads and the Master Gardeners in the Door County Seed Library, and we all had parallel goals. And we thought, well, if we would collaborate and cross-pollinate, we could share our activities, we could share our lectures, we could co-sponsor our different things. And so this seed collecting thing we're looking forward to is a collaboration of four different organizations.
Wow, that's wonderful. And yet there's an event, is it November 5th, I think it is?
It is November 5th, yes.
Yeah, and it's at the Crossroads.
It is, and it's in a place we call the Wild Ones Meadow. About 20 years ago, a group of people came to us, I was the director then, and said they were the Wild Ones, and they noticed that we had an open field. It was pretty awful. So they'd be willing to help us take out the invasives and put in some flowers. And I went to my board and they said, Wild Ones, you know, do they drive motorcycles? Do they have keg parties? And no, they don't. And indeed, they did what they said they'd do. And they had collected seeds in their own gardens, their own prairies and the roadsides. And we did plow up the land, and we got rid of the invasives. And they went out with little Dixie cups and their seeds and broadcast them. And at first I thought, what a failure this is, because it takes a long time for native plants to take hold. A lot of it's done underground for the first couple of years. But over the last 20 years, the Wild Ones Meadow has become just a kaleidoscope of beautiful native plants. And each year after the Wild Ones banquet that they have in November, they all have a seed exchange. And anything that's left over, we have broadcast out in our meadow. And so we really have quite a biodiversity of plants that do grow well in our climate. So it's a good place to go collecting.
I'm going to take issue with you on one thing. I'll bet you there's a wild one or two that does ride around on a motorcycle.
That could be.
Oh, man. Well, here's a question for you. I've got an email. Let's see what you can do with this one from Harold. And Harold collects dozens of species, seeds, and so forth, and has pretty good luck. But he has problems harvesting seed from three plants, Ohio spiderwort, wild quinine, and bergamot. And he's not, it doesn't necessarily have to be pure seed. There could be some trash in there too. He uses his harvest to overseed in late fall on existing prairie. But why does he have trouble with Ohio spiderwort or wild quinine or bergamot?
Well, I would, you know what I would do? I would try winter sowing. Have you heard that term? Anyway, it's just taking, you take a gallon jug and you put holes in it, and then you cut it, you know, leave about 3 inches of depth for to put your potting soil in there or sand. I use 50% potting soil and 50% tube sand, which is a little coarser grain sand. And then you put your seed in there. And then you take duct tape and you take duct tape around that gallon milk jug, and then you water it, of course, before that, and you put holes in it, set it out, put it in a snowdrift, if you might say, in the late fall, and you have much better luck with that than I used to do the other method, planting it in flats, but I've learned to use winter sowing as a much better technique because of the greenhouse effect and they seem to germinate a lot faster. So I would try that method called winter sowing.
Winter sowing. There you go.
Winter sowing. You can look that up on the internet too.
You can join in too with your questions or comments. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Here's another email from Roxanne. She has a big patch of buckthorn. She'd like to take it down this winter. In the past, she's treated stumps with Roundup, but doesn't think it will work in winter, and wonders what your suggestions are.
We have been, we meaning Crossroads, right now are in the middle of a multi-year restoration project. It's a huge project. We have quite a bit of grant funding. And so we have been treating buckthorn all year round when it's at least warm enough that the herbicide will stay liquid when we're doing it. I will say that fall is the best time to treat. But we have done it in the wintertime, and we use daubers. We use the buckthorn blasters to stump treat the little stumps. We cut them as low as we can to the ground and then use the buckthorn blasters to apply the herbicide. And we have had luck, even in the winter, as long as the herbicide doesn't freeze in the little...
Yeah, I think it typically they've said 50 degrees, but I think you get away with... cooler than that.
We've gotten away with much cooler. But again, the fall is the best time to use the herbicide because that's when the trees are sending chemicals down into the roots, and that's where you want the herbicide to hit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very good advice. Kristen in Chippewa Falls has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Kristen.
For advice, I'm actually in my wildflower garden, self-seeded from collections. And live in a wooded subdivision with lots of deer and have tried the pepper sprays, human hair, fencing. Wondering your recommendations on perhaps DIY deer repellent recipes. Thank you.
Okay. So Kristen's got a nice native garden, but she's also got a whole bunch of deer, given, you know, where she is, and hasn't had good luck keeping them away or keeping them from eating up her her plants.
Yeah. I would try to use what they call liquid fence. It's a material you can buy at Ace Hardware or similar to that. And I've had good luck with that. It's called liquid fence.
So what do you do with that? Spray it on the plants or?
Yes, you do. Yep. You spray it on the plants.
All right.
And I have herds of deer going through my yard. And sometimes they help. We had all of our New England asters nibbled down to nubbins. And usually they are just such a leggy plant that they aren't really appropriate in a household garden. And when the deer pruned them, they came back and they were thicker and lovelier. And I'm like, hey, you know, maybe this is okay. But I guess we just live with them. It's part of nature.
Okay. Yeah, you can do that too.
There you go. Our guests today, Don Gustafson, board member of Wild Ones of Door Peninsula, native seed coordinator for the Sturgeon Bay Seed Library, and Coggin Herring, a naturalist at Crossroads at Big Creek in Sturgeon Bay, president of the Wild Ones of the Door Peninsula, and a master gardener and a master naturalist. You can join in with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Dinner, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Okay, who wants to take that one?
I can take that.
Okay.
We are planting some today. I have four groups of kindergartners coming out, and we're just going to blow those seeds out and let them spread all over the fields. And it works really well. But some people do like to put them in bags, and this time of year is the time to collect them. And you put them in a bag, and then you shake the bag, and the fluff comes out the top, and you've got the seeds down at the bottom. I winter sow. I put things out before winter, so you don't have to stratify them. I let nature do it for me. Yeah. Then you can cut the plant back. It will grow from the roots.
All right. There you go, Helen. Thank you very much for calling. In other words, you can get busy right now if you want to. Or you could do as you suggest and get the fluff out and then winter seed them. All right. Brad in Avoca, on to you now. Hi, Brad.
Hello, Larry and guest. I have a comment about buckthorn or any other kind of woody thing you want to kill. I have a really good herbicide that I use around the farm called Cordon, Cordon. And it's a stump herbicide, and you can put that on any time of the year as long as you have a fresh cut, and it seems to work really well, even on small things.
Cordon, you said, Brad.
Yeah, Cordon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Yeah. Have you guys had any experience, Don? Yeah, have you had any experience with that?
No, I haven't. I know we used to, when I worked for the Glenview Park District, which is a Chicago suburb, and I did a lot of buckthorn removal. You know, we would cut them down and then put on this herbicide, but I can't think of it. But this sounds like a really good one, this Cordon, Cordon. So I'll definitely try it.
Brad, thanks very much for calling. Fred in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Fred.
Well, howdy. Sounds like I was too late. But anyway, the lady who wondered about poisoning buckthorn in the fall, I've done it way down until it got, you know, in the 30s, and I don't like being outside. And I cut the stumps down, and I use a brush to just brush the stuff just on the stump. You guys mentioned a dauber that you can put the herbicide in and then daub the stumps with? Where would one find this, and what's it called?
The dauber is called a buckthorn blaster. And if you just Google it, there are several places you can get it. But I believe the invasive species, NASMA, which is a group of invasive species thing, do sell the buckthorn blaster. But that is a commercial name. And what it's like, it reminds me, if you've ever gone to a bingo game and you have like a foam top and then a tube, you put the herbicide in the tube and the foam top and you just dab it like you would when you're playing bingo. And you usually will want to order extra foam tips because after you do 1,000 or so of buckthorn, you will wear out the tip. But they are very effective. And the beauty of them is you have no collateral damage. You don't spray it to other plants. It doesn't get into the soil. It just goes into the plant. And it is the best way we have been able to find to get rid of it and make sure it stays gone.
Fred, there you go. Thank you so much. I'm glad we got that explained again. Thank you. Susan in Oregon, it's your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I have a question, but I was going to make a comment about a previous caller when she asked if it was a good time to cut down the stems from the milkweed. And I'm wondering, though, I read about how some beneficial insects harbor, you know, winter over in stems. And I'm wondering, I usually try to just leave that up during the winter. It looks kind of pretty in the snow, and I try not to clean my garden up too much before winter. That's my comment. But then my question is, I have several native plantings in my yard, and all of a sudden last year and now this year again, they have been invaded by some pampas grass. And so I cut off the blossoms of the pampas grass. I'm wondering, should I zap it with a little bit of herbicide, the stems, because I don't want this invasive pampas grass in there. And I thought about, you know, burning the whole thing in the spring, but I think that pampas grass would grow back after the burn.
Yeah, have you had issues with pampas grass in the past?
I have not, but no, I'm not familiar. I've heard of it, but I thought it was more of a warm season or more of a tropical areas where that grows, not so much up here, but
Okay.
Any comments?
So maybe can't help you out so much on that unless Coggin has something to add to that. No?
Our problem grasses are Phragmites and reed canary grass, but we haven't had any problem with pampas grass, so I have no experience on that one.
I would just like to add, it's a good idea to keep your plants growing in the fall and not cut them down. It really is, because, like you said, beneficial insects can lay their eggs on it. So I would say it's better to keep your plants up and keep them growing. That's just my, and I've heard that that's a good idea.
That's the way I do it.
At Crossroads, we do messy gardening, which means we leave everything there for bird seed, actually. And right now the sparrows are coming through and they're having a wonderful time on our coneflowers and so forth. So it's like feeding birds all year. And what your caller said, when the snow falls, it's like a second blooming. And you see blossoms of snow where you've left your standing dead.
Yeah, I love that look in the winter as well. That's why it's kind of messy. My place looks a little messy right now, you know, along the sidewalk and so forth. But, you know, in the winter, it's going to look a lot better.
There you go.
Thanks, Susan. Appreciate it. Joanne in Viroqua, on to you now. Hi, Joanne.
Yes, I have a section that's been invaded by bishop's weed that I want to smother by covering it for the winter and spring so I can put in native. I don't want to kill the microorganisms in the soil, so what can I cover it with that will keep the bishop's weed from surviving but not kill off the microorganisms?
What do you think? Coggin, you have an idea on that?
I know places where we've wanted to put things in, we've tarped it for almost a year to make sure everything is completely killed out, because it takes a lot to kill stuff.
Yeah.
I applaud you for protecting the microorganisms. There's a jungle down there and it's important. Tarping does kind of protect the soil, and yet it does kill off the plants. But part of the reason tarping helps is the heat of it. I don't think tarping in the winter is going to do any good. I think you have to do it in the summer where it gets hot.
Yeah, you could start in this, and well, I suppose you could put it on now, but otherwise start in the spring, and you'd have to let it go at least a year, I would think, to really make a difference if you're not going to apply any, anything to the soil.
Herbicide, yeah. You could spot treat it, you know, with, I mean, I don't like using chemicals, but, a broadleaf weed killer, just spot treat that plant and not harm the other ones, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I can.
Joanne, thank you. Appreciate the call. Ann in Amory, on to you now. Hi, Ann.
Hi there. I really like your show.
Thank you.
It's so fun, and I love to garden. I've been doing it over 50 years. So I'm really, I don't know that I'm good at it, but I've got a lot of knowledge. Anyhow, but except for, my question is the milkweed. The lady called in and she talked about the milkweed. Well, I've allowed common milkweed to grow in my garden, hoping to gather up some butterflies and so forth, but I haven't seen anything. So someone told me that I was growing the wrong kind. I should use the tame milkweed. So what is your suggestion? And what is, and my milkweed, it plants itself, and I have found that the roots not only go down, but they go horizontally as well and pop up. And they're just, I've had them in my garden for about 4 years and they're everywhere and they've taken over and I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
So away you go.
Okay.
Yeah,
I could speak to.
Yeah. Go ahead, Coggin.
Common milkweed is the one that the butterflies do use. They will use anything in the milkweed family, like butterfly weed and so forth, but they do use the common milkweed. But when we have gatherings and so forth, when people have in-town gardens, small gardens, just landscaping gardens, I recommend that they don't plant milkweed because just as you say, they will sucker out. They are very, very coarse and not very attractive. And the thing is, when you have just isolated little colonies of milkweed, the butterflies are not going to find it. They find them in big fields. And so it's almost a detriment to try to put them in isolated little gardens unless you have other bigger plots nearby. I will also say this year, at least in Door County, we had very, very few caterpillars this year. And I think it's because spring was so late. There were no milkweeds up when the butterflies got here, but that's just my personal opinion. We had very, very few this year, so I wouldn't judge the production of your milkweed this year by not having anything because there weren't any.
You could try another milkweed. You could try swamp milkweed or red milkweed. It would be a good alternative for that because it is common milkweed is too aggressive, and you want it. You don't want it in your garden. That's for sure. So try something.
I just pulled it. You know, I kept pulling it out of my my garden, and it didn't take long for the other natives to overcome the common.
Good.
Ann, thanks. Appreciate the call. Maddie and De Pere, we'll go to you next. Hi, Maddie.
Hello. You're talking about different applications for getting rid of unwanted vegetation. Larry, I wish you would have a show about bringing in a goat handler, a show about how you locate one, how much it costs, and, you know, that's a natural way, and it doesn't hurt anything in nature.
Maddie, thanks for calling. You know, we've talked about it in the past on the show. They're good even on the worst kinds of plants like buckthorn. How they eat buckthorn, I don't know, but they manage to. They've got a way to tame it down, and they're very, very good at it. And there are goat herds. I think it's more prevalent in places like California, but there are goat herders here in Wisconsin that will take their goats to your property and let them loose in your woods or wherever it is that you want those plants removed, and they will do it. Maddie, thank you. Stephen Ives Grove, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, we were talking about that stump treatment for buckthorn, and I know about it, but my question is, can I apply that procedure if the buckthorn are underneath maple trees, under the canopy?
Will it harm the maple trees, you're saying? Shouldn't.
I wouldn't think so. No, I would go ahead and put cut them down and then put some kind of a herbicide on it, whether it be this one fella mentioned cordon or something. But, yeah, I'd go ahead and do it. I don't think it'll affect the maple tree.
Well, it goes down into the roots of the specific plant. Yeah,
exactly.
There you go, Steve. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Nikki in Milwaukee emailed in regard to the winter sowing of milkweed. If you were to start new plants, what month do you plant the seeds in the milk jugs?
I plant mine in November, December. You know, late. I've had good success with that in the milk jugs.
Okay. All right. Yeah. There you go, Jill. Joanne in Stoughton, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Great subject here. I just wanted to say that I grow common milkweed, and I live right in the town of Stoughton, or city of Stoughton. And it does, I do agree that it does grow horizontally and it can be aggressive. But my fix to that is I pull what I don't want. And it comes up in the grass. It comes up in an area of my garden. But I control it by cutting the grass, you know, cutting it off, and also just pulling what I don't want to grow. And I actually have raised butterflies for the last 4 years.
Excellent, Joanne.
Yeah,
you're doing basically what I do. Pull the ones you want to get rid of and leave the ones, you know, if you want to leave some, leave them, but pull the ones you don't want. It makes perfect sense to me.
I confirm.
Collecting seeds, we should talk about that for a minute. What are the important things to remember if you're out collecting seeds? I suppose one thing is, you know, it's not your own property, there are probably some, you want to be asking permission, I would think. But what else would we need to consider?
Well, you got to make sure that the seed is mature. And so then if that's the case, then it's easy to harvest the seed. So this time of the year now, late November, like when we're going to collect seed now at Crossroads, this is a good time to do it.
The seeds are mature.
The seeds are mature to ready to harvest.
And as you say, you mentioned the winter. What if you want to wait till spring or something? Can you keep them over winter?
Oh, Larry, that is a very good question. And there's multiple answers. Actually, our seed library put out a little handout that we're going to give to the people who come here. And for each species of seed, it will say, oh, no special preparation is needed, and you can just put those, store them in the house. But for most of our wild seeds, they need to be stratified. They need to be kept cold in the winter. Some need to be kept moist. Some don't. And every single species has a different requirement.
Right.
So if people do collect seeds, but then they take them home and put them in their kitchen cupboard, they're almost doomed to failure.
Yeah.
You need to know what to do with each different species. We have some things that you can collect. One of your first callers mentioned wild bergamot. You really don't even need to stratify that one. I'm surprised that was problematic. But most of the ones we have in our prairie do need to go through a cold period in order to, jumpstart the seed in the spring. And many, many seeds are not able to germinate if they haven't gone through that winter rest period.
Yeah.
Cold.
Yeah. It makes good sense. Mary in Oregon, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question about overseeding two patches of my lawn out in the countryside. One is it's just a grass lawn, and it's about 100 by 200 feet that I want to turn into prairie. And the other is a taller grass patch that's out in my field. Do I cut them down to, like, dirt? I really don't want to spray it with an herbicide. And what are the chances that it would survive and do something next year?
Not going to be very happy if you don't get rid of it.
I don't want to be discouraging, but I know of a number of places where they've tried to overseed a prairie planting. And the first year it looks wonderful. And then the grass will come and take it over and it will not last. And so if you really want to start from scratch and you have an area that you've either have really good, well-sustained lawn, you're going to have to somehow, again, maybe tarp it or something, kill it off before you put in prairie seeds or you won't be happy.
Especially in a lawn, I would think you could, this time of the year, you could rent a sod cutter and you could just literally cut sod strips out with a sod cutter, and you'd be way ahead of the game when it came to them with the seeds, because you'd be rid of that.
I will tell you about the Peterson Prairie that Don was mentioning that we have behind the YMCA, and it had been fallow for some time, and it was so very, very filled with grass and non-native plants, they suggest they just bulldoze the whole topsoil off rather than try to overseed.
Yeah.
They're just, if your non-natives and your grass are really well established, it's difficult.
Yeah.
You can't let just nature take its course. It's not going to take its course.
Yeah, you're not going to be happy with the result down the road and all that work, and the time will be most of the 99.9% of the time, you're probably not going to be happy a year or two from now with what's happened.
You can also, I mean, I don't like using a herbicide, but you can do that. A lot of people don't. I mean, I have done it in certain spots. I don't like using it, but herbicide will kill everything off. And then you have to wait a while and then replant or do your planting.
Yeah. There you go, Mary. Thank you for calling. Man, Matt in Milwaukee, your turn.
Yeah, I was just calling to suggest a way of smothering out plants without destroying the soil underneath, and that's to lay cardboard down. And you lay depending on the size of area you have, the cardboard, you lay cardboard compost and mulch down, let that sit for a year. That cardboard will biodegrade into the soil and the microorganisms, and you have nice fresh soil in there.
Yeah. That's good advice, I believe, Don.
Yeah. You can use cardboard, and it'll smother the plants, and then let that decompose, and it'll add some organic matter to your soil, and get rid of your weeds.
Thanks again for that suggestion. Appreciate it. Don Gustafson, board member of Wild Ones of Door Peninsula, and native seed coordinator for the Sturgeon Bay Seed Library in Coggin Hearing, a naturalist at Crossroads at Big Creek in Sturgeon Bay, and president of Wild Ones of the Door Peninsula. She's also a master gardener and master naturalist. Join in with your questions. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And I did want to mention that stump chemical, we were calling it cordon, but I think it's really tordon. T-O-R-D-O-N is the proper name for that. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at native seeds and native plants and planting with our two guests today, Coggin Hearinga, a naturalist at Crossroads at Big Creek in Sturgeon Bay, and Don Gustafson, board member of Wild Ones of Door County, of Door Peninsula, native seed coordinator for the Sturgeon Bay Seed Library. Coggin, by the way, is also president of Wild Ones of the Door Peninsula and a master gardener and master naturalist as well. So let's take some more calls here as we move along. Jim in Wisconsin Rapids, we turn to you next. What's on your mind, Jim?
Yeah, hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I may have missed some of your explanations earlier, but here's my situation. We're thinking of turning our lawn at our hunting cabin into a prairie for less maintenance. It's probably an eighth of an acre or so. It's currently in grass. So here was our plan, and I'll let you tell me if we're on the right track, but we were thinking of spraying it a couple times with glyphosate and then doing that next summer. And then we would do a fall seeding with a short grass prairie mix with some regular and flowers in there and things like that for pollination. Now, my question is, would it be advisable to till that lightly before we seed it, or just can we seed right into the dead grass and let that control the erosion that could potentially occur?
This is only an eighth of an acre, you said?
Yeah.
Well, that's a small area. I would consider buying small prairie plants. This way you can plant them yourself. You plant them in multiples of three to five or whatever groupings you have. There's shorter ones in front, the taller ones in back. Because mine's about that size, or maybe a little bit larger. And I put plants in. So get to know a nursery that has native plants. And there's a good one in certain, I don't know where you're at, but this is Stone Silo Prairie Gardens in De Pere. And he has small plants, and buy them there and get it started that way. Because it takes a while when you plant seed, and it may not be successful. And so I would encourage you to get plants.
I guess you
That's
could.
What I would do.
Yeah, you could go. I guess the plan that he set up was probably okay, but the native the plants themselves would definitely give you better success right off the bat. I would think
exactly.
as well. Yeah.
Yes.
There you go, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. Prairie Nurseries, another place where you could go for plants too.
Absolutely.
Jamie Sue in Campbellsport. We'll go to you next. Hi, Jamie Sue.
Hi. Love your show, Larry. It's one of my favorites.
Thank you.
Thank you for talking about the importance of native plants. It's such a great thing. I have two comments. I have a land restoration business, and we do woody invasive work all winter long, and we pretty much work to 0 degrees. As long as you're using an oil-based herbicide that doesn't freeze, it works fabulous. And also, my other comment is the problem of unwanted grasses in a prairie situation. We've been using the bundling method, and we gather all the grass stems because usually they're in patches unless you're dealing with like smooth brome or some other like turf grasses, fescues and stuff that make more of a turf. But like reed canary grass and that pampas grass, you could probably do a bundling method, and you just tie it up in a bundle, get all the grass stems together, and you cut it right above that string or the leaves that you're using to tie it together, and then you treat that surface of the grasses. And I usually use like a 12% Roundup, like glyphosate product, or an Aquanet if it's near water, and it works fabulous. You don't kill anything else, and it's great. So,
and Jamie Sue, what's the name of your business?
My business is Native Niche LLC out of Campbellsport.
Oh, thank you very much for calling. Yeah. Appreciate your call.
And I'll jump in there.
Go ahead.
We had very good luck with bundling also, with reed canary grass especially, which is not a good thing.
Not a good thing to have. The bundling's good, but not if you do have it, then the bundling method works really good. Jamie Sue, again, thanks for calling. Russ in Belleville will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Russ.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to give people a little encouragement that you can do a no herbicide interseeding planting of prairie and be successful. The key is you have to get rid of that duff. We did a planting in Madison, that Prairie Ridge Conservation Park. I was the supervisor there for 25 years. We had a plant area that was brome grass with prairie mixed in, so obviously we didn't want to spray herbicides. So in that case, we in the fall we burned off the property, then we went in there and used a no-till drill to make sure we got that seed tight to the ground, and then all we did was periodically burn it. It took about 5 years, but now you wouldn't be able to tell that it was never herbicided. It looks like a native prairie.
Oh,
fantastic. Good for you.
And I think your comment, Russ, on seed-to-soil contact is a good one. I think that goes back to somebody earlier who had asked about that, and I don't know if we addressed that, but that's you're going to get a lot better germination if you've got good seed-to-soil contact, almost for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And I know in our area, and I suppose it's in other areas too, our soil and water department has one of those. They have a planter that you can borrow. And so if you're going to do a large area, you can do one of those, use one of those planters. And they're really cool.
Yeah.
And they do plant the seeds in the ground.
Yeah. So yeah. you're going to get a much, much better germination for sure. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Sue emailed, she continues to tune in to Garden Talk, even though she now lives in Washington State, and one of her master gardener friends there shared a homemade deer repellent. That's worked well for her in her semi-native yard. The deer are blacktails, a coastal species, but I don't know, might work as well. And she, maybe we could post that up. It's a gallon jug or spray mix together of a cup of milk, an egg, a tablespoon of dish soap, and a tablespoon of cooking oil. And after mixing, you add enough water to make a gallon. And then you use that to mist your plants. Sometimes it helps to alter the formula a little by adding a small amount of essential oil like lavender or some cayenne powder as well. So we should probably hang on to that one, Jill, because I'm sure there are going to be some other people who are going to want that recipe again. Lori and Shawno, hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, I thought I recognized Pagan's voice. I used to work with her at Newport State Park back in the day. My question is, as far as the, you know, the neonics that are killing bees, if you buy a plant, because these nurseries don't say anything about whether they use pesticides or not, how long does that stay in that plant? So if you buy it this year, is it going to be in next year once it's gone through the whole process of the plant this year? When it renews itself in the spring, is it going to still be there? And a comment is, another way to kill off weeds, too, that you don't want is maybe old rugs or towels that you can't give away to, like, Goodwill or other places that won't take or anything like that.
Yeah, well, and that's a good suggestion. In terms of the neonics, I can't tell you off the top of my head if it stays, it continues to stay in the plant after a growing year and into the next growing year. I don't know for sure.
I remember reading something about that they do have a half-life. But you're better off going to a nursery where they guarantee they don't use neonics.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And that was an issue when it came to some, you know, other plants, like other milkweed plants other than the common, because if they used neonics, it would create problems for the other insects, for sure. Donna in Hartford, hi.
Morning. I've been trying to follow along with all of the milkweed discussions, but that has been something that my husband and I have been thinking about putting in our yard. But we do live in the city, and we have about a half acre yard total. So what I'm gathering is that planting small patches, and the one thing I had learned about milkweed in the past is that you should put it in more than one spot in your yard, not just have it in one place. But so are the experts saying that you really, it's not really beneficial, you're not really going to help the monarchs out by having small patches in a city yard?
Can I say something really, probably, I don't know, you won't like it, but planting milk, if you really want to help your monarchs, there are enough milkweeds in Wisconsin. They are doing fine with their caterpillars. The best thing you can do for monarch butterflies in Wisconsin is have plants that bloom in the spring and the fall. So when they get here from their migration north, they can get some nectar. When they're filling up to go to Mexico, they can get some nectar. They need the fuel in the migration times. We still have lots of milkweed out in the fields, which means they are not eating it up. We have more than we need.
Don Gustafson, board member of Wild Ones of Door Peninsula and native seed coordinator for the Sturgeon Bay Seed Library. One of our guests, the other, Coggin Hearing, a naturalist at Crossroads at Big Creek in Sturgeon Bay and president of the Wild Ones of the Door Peninsula, and a master gardener and a master naturalist. Our guests for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, talking about native plants and seeds with our guests today. They are Coggin Hearing, naturalist at Crossroads at Big Creek in Sturgeon Bay, president of Wild Ones of the Door Peninsula, master gardener and master naturalist. And with her is Don Gustafson. Don's a board member of the Wild Ones of Door Peninsula and the native seed coordinator for the Sturgeon Bay Seed Library. Questions for them, you can join in at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Just a comment again, another comment relating to Tordon. Torger emailed to say that Tordon will affect trees if their roots are intertwined with the plant they're trying to kill. I could see where that could be the case. Something to certainly think about. John emailed that meadow blazing star is better than milkweed for monarchs. What do you think, Coggin?
Meadow blazing star is a magnet it's just a wonderful plant for monarchs and all of the butterflies and the pollinators, including the bees. But when I said we need fall blooming plants for the monarchs migrating, we do also for our fall pollinator or for our pollinators who need to get ready for winter, but also in spring. And I think people underestimate the value of spring blooming shrubs and trees.
Mm-hmm.
When our monarchs get here, we aren't seeing them on the ground. We're seeing them on the lilacs and on the pussy willows and on all the,
Creeping Charlie.
Well, they do go to the Creeping Charlie, but they're looking for nectar and they're looking for lots of it in one place. And so please don't underestimate the value of putting one or two spring blooming shrubs or trees in your planting, because I think that will really help pollinators and also your migrating butterflies and so forth in the times when they really need them. And the same way in fall, if you have things like Blazing Star and New England Aster and some of the goldenrods, that have just copious amounts of nectar, that's going to help these insects fatten up, because they're going to be flying over a whole lot of the Great Plains where they don't have flowers. I mean, the row crops go from ditch to ditch. It's terrible. So they have to use Wisconsin to fuel themselves up to get over that, to get to Mexico.
Yeah. And Don, you're also a promoter or a proponent of pollinator gardens. And I think Coggin probably mentioned some of the plants, but in your mind, what are some of the easiest native plants to add to into a garden like that?
I'm glad you mentioned that, Larry. As far as spring goes, pollinator plants, that would be like golden Alexander, foxglove, beard tongue, prairie violet, shooting star. Those are some of the early ones. You want to have them there to for pollinators to get their pollen and nectar. And then for summer, you'd want bee balm, purple coneflower, black-eyed Susan, meadow blazing star. The one we meant, the magnet for the monarch butterfly. And then in the fall, you'd want showy goldenrod, your asters like New England Aster and brown-eyed Susan.
So a good that sounds like a really good mix, and then you're going to have flowering plants all year long. I mean, all season long, pretty much.
Exactly.
Yes, and, but you also want to go for biodiversity, because there are many, many of our wild native bees that are specific to one or two plants. And so if you don't have those one or two plants, those bees will die out. The more different kinds of plants you can have, the better off you're going to be as far as stimulating the growth and expansion of our wild bees.
And just specifically on that, Coggin, can you think of one or two off the top of your head that for those specific bees?
There's so many wild bees now. And different bees have different needs. Some bees don't even come out until their one flower is in bloom. And there are books, Heather Holm wrote one, that will tell you what flower, if you want a certain kind of bee, what flower you should plant to be to provide for that bee.
You were talking earlier, and I think we did mention this, but the event that you're having, you were talking about a handout and so forth, but talk more about that event and how people might get involved in that event.
Well, the event is going to be held at Crossroads at Big Creek, and it is a collaboration between a group of people. And so the people from the Seed Library have put together a wonderful handout that has pictures of the flower in bloom, but then also the seed pod. Because when you go out in the woods or you go out in the prairie in November, you aren't going to be able to recognize it just from the fluffy little fluffs out there. So it'll help people choose what seeds they want to collect. There will be people from the Seed Library that have collected and cleaned seeds, and they will hand out packets of free seeds to people, and they will have the stratification directions and all the directions they need. So we will be giving away free seeds. We will hand out the handout. We'll give out bags, and Don and I will take groups out into the area to collect their own seeds. But there will also be some people from Master Gardeners who will be showing how to do winter sowing and show how to make the little containers like Don was talking about. So we'll have Master Gardeners doing that. We'll have the Seed Library people giving away free seeds. Don will be leading a tour into the prairie to collect seeds. And then we will have an information table so people can learn about the flowers that we have at Crossroads.
So it's at Crossroads. And again, give me the dates and time, date and times.
The event will be November 5th, which is a Saturday. It will be at 11 a.m.
November 5th, starting at 11 and running all day probably, or part of the day?
I hope it winds down before the end of the day. What happened last year is we gave the orientation. We had more people than we could handle last year, so that's why we're dividing the group this year. People were really excited about it. So we will divide the group, and they'll probably be out about an hour. So I figure it'll be over by 12:30.
Okay. You can join in, too, with your own questions as we talk about native seeds and native plantings with our guests Don Gustafson and Coggin Heringa. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Somebody joining us.
If I could add something that pertains, next Tuesday night, that would be October 25th, we are going to have a program at Crossroads that's sponsored by Wild Ones and the Master Gardeners of Door County. And it's going to be easy to grow pollinator plants for spring, summer, and fall. And the speaker is going to be Justin Cronin, who is the owner of the Stone Silo Nursery Garden. So that should be a really good program for people anywhere in the Door County area.
And if people want more information, I should just get that in too. What's your website? How do people get to that?
Crossroads@BigCreek.org.
Crossroads@BigCreek.org is the way to go. Someone else was wondering, and we have discussed this a little bit, but how getting native gardens ready for winter and then what needs to be done in the spring?
You want to take that, Don?
Yeah, sure. Well, as far as, you know, I have a pollinator garden at, or we've sponsored one there at Whitefish Dunes State Park. And that's right by the nursery, I should say the nature center. And in the fall, you really don't want to do much. You just let it, everything be. You want all the eggs that are on there and the good things, you want to leave that alone. And in the spring, I mean, if it's large enough, you can burn it, or if it's a small area and you can't do that, then you just simply cut the plants down to the ground, and then the roots, they'll be coming up in the spring. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I do essentially the same thing, nothing. We have our messy garden in front of the Collins Learning Center at Crossroads, and there are some very, very coarse-stalked plants like compass plant that are way too thick for bees to make winter homes in it. And sometimes they will lean over and look a little messy, and we'll cut them down just for attractiveness sake. But for mostly, we leave up most of our plants standing dead. And then in the spring, and we wait till it's been warm, like above 50 for about a week before we even start cutting things back. Right. Because we want to give the baby, native bees a chance to hatch and go forth before we cut back all of the stems. But we wait until it's been warm for maybe 50 degrees or above for about a week, and then we cut back the dead stuff.
Let's
take another call. Dennis in Two Rivers will give you a chance. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, I was wondering, as far as pollinators, if they rely on scent, so maybe the kind of scent a flower puts out matters, or maybe its sight and the size and the color matters. And I don't know, it might depend on which species go by sight or by olfactory. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah.
Well, I would say all those three, scent, color, size of the flower, you know, they all attract specific pollinators. So I would just say all those factors.
I agree. It's all of the above. And they're learning more and more about things like that. For one thing, Crossroads is really into promoting dark skies. And it turns out that some flowers are programmed to give off a scent at just about the time when the bees start flying. They can't fly until it's warm enough in the morning. So they give off the scent when they're expecting the bees to start flying. And we're discovering that when people have a lot of artificial light at night, the flowers give off their scent too early and miss the pollinators. So it's a very complicated thing. But one of the things you can do is make sure you don't light up your garden at night, because that will mess up some of the scent production and the attractants.
Good points. Very good points. Let's go to Maggie in Milwaukee next. Hi, Maggie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm a teacher, and each year I like to have my students to see a monarch caterpillar going through its stages. This year, caterpillar kind of late. So just a couple days ago, it went into its chrysalis. And I'm wondering, you know, when it comes out, it might be too cold to let our new butterfly go. And I'm thinking of calling a greenhouse, or wondering if our speakers have any ideas.
What do you think, Coggin?
What do you think, Coggin?
I think it's not going to make it. It won't have the flower. It won't have the nectar to fuel up to make it to Mexico.
Yeah, so, but could it
take it as an exciting teaching event and then know that it's not going to make it?
Yeah. Well, if it's around in a greenhouse, would that help?
I wouldn't think
It might live for a while in there, but will it become part of the population that reproduces?
No. Yeah. Okay. Linda in Green Bay emailed. She has some black-eyed Susans. She'd like to get some started near her or around her cottage up north. So black-eyed Susans, what should she do to get
started? Well, they're a special. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a special plant because it not only attracts many pollinators, but it's a very long blooming plant. It blooms from July to October. So that's a very good one, and it's easy to grow. And, you know, I do that in the winter sowing. I put it in a milk jug and put it out for the winter, and next spring you're going to have some black-eyed Susan seedlings. So that's what I would do.
I agree. It is one of those plants that does need to have at least 30 days of cold, and it has to be moist during that time. So it takes a little bit of winter treatment, and Don's winter sowing thing will take care of that for you if you try that milk jug thing.
Maybe do that
winter treatment.
You know, it's been a long time since you talked about that, Don, but why don't you explain that again, that winter sowing with the...
Well, it's really quite simple. And I, like I say, I used to broadcast my seed in the fall, and I didn't have much luck with it. But what you do is you just take a milk jug, and you cut all around it, but right up to the handle, and you leave about three to four inches of the bottom of the jug so you can put your soil medium in there. And you plant your seeds, you water. Make sure you got holes on the bottom of the jug and on the top so that water and precipitation can get in there. Then you seal it up with duct tape. I use a transparent duct tape and to get more light in there. And then you take your jug and you put it out in a snow drift and you leave it all winter long. And next spring you'll have excellent germination. And then you can take your plants out, you transplant them into pots, and then you let them grow a while and they get established, and then you can plant them in the fall, or it should say in August, and then you can give those plants to other people, you can start your own pollinator garden, and so it's just an excellent way of growing your seeds into seedlings.
Steve in Milwaukee emailed that he's had success with common milkweed in a small lot in Milwaukee, though it can spread some. It's easy to handle with pulling early. He gets many monarchs. He gets eastern swallowtails and other butterflies, and mentions that diversity of wildflowers throughout the year really does help as well. He's even had hummingbirds feeding on his Virginia bluebells in the spring. So there you go. That sounds pretty good to me. Nick emailed to ask if there's a good place to purchase native Wisconsin seeds online.
Yeah, that would be...
Prairie Nursery has online.
Yeah, Prairie Nursery, yeah. We're Wisconsin, yes, Prairie Nursery. Yeah.
I think you're right about that. And there may be some other... recipes as well.
Except, you know what? With Prairie Nursery, I would call them because they take the time to talk you through and say, now, do you really have this kind of soil? Do you really have dry? And they will talk you through, and their consultants, their telephone people are not just, you know, write down an order. They tell you, or they say, you know, you live in Door County. Are you sure you want to put this plant? Even though it's an online thing, it's worth it to call them. They're so wonderful.
Prairie Moon Nursery is a good one too in Minnesota if you're thinking about seeds. But
and they have a great catalog.
Yeah, they do. Okay. So both of those are very good. But Prairie Nursery in Wisconsin is in Wisconsin if you want to deal with just Wisconsin.
I want to go back to the deer repellent recipe that was talked about earlier in the show. It was given to us by a master gardener, and it's worked well in her semi-native yard, and it's a gallon jug or sprayer mixed together, a cup of milk, an egg, a tablespoon of dish soap and a tablespoon of cooking oil. And then after mixing, you add enough water to make a gallon. And then you just mist your plants with that. Sometimes it helps to add maybe a small amount of essential oil like lavender or some cayenne powder. But we put that, Jill posted that up on our Larry Mueller Show page. So if you go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry and you go to today's date, we have that recipe linked on our program notes. So you're gonna find that right there. Well, once again, the date for your big event is Saturday, November 5th. Got that right? And it's at 11 o'clock at the Crossroads at Big Creek in Sturgeon Bay, right?
That's correct. 2041 Michigan.
Yeah.
Don't forget the lady that lecture we're having October 25th with Larry Croning. It's easy to grow pollinator plants, and that's also at the Collins Learning Center. And it's going to be a great speaker, and it's all about easy to grow pollinator plants.
Well, on that happy note, I want to thank you both for being with us today. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I hope we'll have a chance to do this again down the road. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Larry.
You're welcome.
Our guests today have been Coggan Heringa, a naturalist at Crossroads at Big Creek in Sturgeon Bay, and the president of the Wild Ones of the Door Peninsula, and a master gardener and master naturalist, and with her, Don Gustafson, board member of Wild Ones of Door Peninsula and the native seed coordinator for the Sturgeon Bay Seed Library. A great pleasure to have them with us to talk about natives today on the show. Just looking ahead to tomorrow, Monday, Mike Bino from our Wisconsin will be back to talk about some unique people and places in Wisconsin. And then at 11:45, we'll take a look at the book of poetry. It has an agricultural bent for sure. And its title, the title of the book is Ancestry. That's Monday starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, I hope you stay with us. There's lots more in store right through the afternoon and evening here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.